Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Renegade Christian Talk Radio. And this is where Christians who are called to run for-profit companies that fund the kingdom and spread the gospel to help gain and put gain into the business world and gain into the kingdom and gain insight into running a Christ-centered business come and listen each and every single week. My name is Matt Gologli, and I am your host, where each and every week we dive into topics that are pertinent to Christian entrepreneurs and Christian business owners, and how to run a, like I said, a for-profit company in a fallen world, in a secular world. For those of you who are new listeners to the show, you can find out more about me, Matt Gologli, by going to ProfitGodsWay.com. That's www.ProfitGodsWay.com. And there is, you can download some free audio, and especially an interview I did with Bob Rigneris, on why is it that some Christian entrepreneurs profit and others don't. And this week on our show, I have two great guests with me. I have two wonderful copywriters, and we're going to be diving into the topic of using psychological triggers to get your customer to part with their cold, hard cash and not feel guilty about it. This is a regular topic or a regular concern that I get with a lot of clients as they come to our site at Profit God's Way, is they really wonder, how much can I profit as a Christian? And then the next thing that they ask is, well, you know, not only how much can I profit, but how in the world can I still use all these other quote-unquote tricks of the trade in order to get people to spend money with me? I think there's a general feeling that Christian entrepreneurs and Christian business owners should either A, give their experience and their knowledge away for free, or that they should also that they shouldn't charge as much as regular everyday secular folks in business. And that, folks, just is not the case. I know this because as a Christian entrepreneur myself, I've struggled with this, and I came to a very simple conclusion when a pastor pulled me aside one day and he said, "You know what, Matt? It's okay to provide for your family." And he was saying that tongue in cheek, but so many Christians I meet are so dead broke, and yet they for some strange reason have a hurdle about going out and running for-profit companies and running successful businesses. So that's the topic that we're going to go into today, and I have two great guests with me today. I have marketing copywriters Ryan Healy and Ben Settle, and we're going to explain what a copywriter is here in just a few moments, but let me tell you a little bit about each one of these gentlemen. The first is Ryan Healy. Ryan lives in Denver, Colorado with his wife and three children. He has an online blog at ryanhealy.com. Ryan is a direct response copywriter who specializes in helping businesses get better results from their advertising. In the last 6 years, Ryan has worked with 65 clients and counting. He has written hundreds of sales letters, and that's literally, that's not just making it up, and has discovered what really works to bring in new customers and, better yet, bigger profits. Healy is the co-author of the book Million Dollar Marketing Secrets and frequently publishes articles about how to write sales copy and advertisements on his blog and on hundreds of websites on the Internet. As Sandy Goldman, the executive director of marketing for the Trump Institute, says about Ryan Healy, "We have used Ryan Healy and his marketing company for several direct marketing pieces, including email, direct mail, and newspaper for our education seminars, national grant conferences, the Trump Institute, and Robert Scheman's Ultimate Riches. Ryan's copywriting has provided us successful results on time and on budget, and I would highly recommend him for your direct marketing campaigns." And Ryan, thank you for joining us on our show today.
Yeah, thank you, Matt.
Pretty good. Not a Christian copywriter doing work for the Donald Trump Institute. That's not too bad, huh?
No, that one has been great. No, I love it, yeah.
And we're going to share some other sites that Ryan has, and we'll eventually go into one that he has about the debt reduction formula, which is specifically about debt reduction for Christian entrepreneurs. Our next guest is Ben Settle, and Ben and I hit it off immediately because of one very simple fact. We're both from the Chicagoland area. However, Ben, you know, I hate to remind this of you, but, you know, Dundee Crown never really quite seemed to beat my high school, Barrington, all that often.
So, well, I never actually lost to Barrington personally, but the school did all the time. Wrestling and baseball and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Ben is also a direct marketing strategist and copywriter. He works and shows with small business owners and entrepreneurs how to find new businesses and new business niches. He has an outstanding blog at bensettle.com. I highly recommend that you check out what Ben has online. He also has a number of wonderful interviews. And actually, one of my favorite interviews, guys, is, Ben, the one you did with Ryan about how to use, what is it, how to use the Bible? What's the headline of it? How to use the Bible even if you're a card-carrying atheist?
Even if you're fire-breathing atheist.
There we go. How to use the Bible to write copy even if you're a fire-breathing atheist. So, in addition to that, Ben also has a book, The Copywriting Grab Bag. He also publishes, like we said, his website at bensettle.com. And his techniques are embraced by small business owners and entrepreneurs of all types because they are simple, easy to use, and don't require a lot of money or resources. I'll just read you from some of his satisfied clients. I have here Steve Habib, the author of How to Buy the Perfect Purebred Puppy, which you'd never imagine that that would be a big market, but I know that is a big market because we're in the market for a purebred puppy right now. Ben, not only did you write a killer sales letter for me, but you included so many other ways to increase my front and back end profits. My head is still spinning with ideas weeks later. So, Ben, thanks for joining me on the call as well.
Well, I sure appreciate you having me on, Matt. I've been looking forward to this.
Well, guys, and those of you who are listening, I want to go into this right off the bat with regards to psychological triggers. And my intent in this call is really to hit the topic dead on, and hit it right between the eyes about this whole concept that Christians, and especially those who are in marketing and sales, can't make as much money or charge as much or do as well or use the tools of the trade of the secular world to get just as many sales as somebody who's not a believer. But before we go into that, I want to ask, and either one of you can answer this or you both can take a stab at it, explain to our listeners what copywriting is. And it's not copywriting like a business idea. It's explain what it is, guys. Ryan, you want to go? I'll let
sure.
you go first.
Yeah, it's the popular definition is salesmanship in print that was put forth by John E. Kennedy in like 1904 or something like that. So salesmanship in print, yeah, it's just instead of face-to-face sales, it's doing sales through the written word. And I forget who said this. I came across this one recently. I thought it was pretty accurate. Thinking on paper.
Thinking on paper.
There you go.
Now, Ben, why would anybody want to put a quote-unquote sales presentation in print? Why would they want to have a sales letter, and I'm assuming when we're talking about sales letter, guys, we're talking about long copy, multiple pages, 16, 20 pages many times, if not more. So, Ben, why would somebody want to do that?
Well, first of all, I think it's the original question is a very good one because it never ceases to amaze me how many people don't know what copywriting is. Just yesterday I was talking to a bookkeeper accountant, and he thought when I said copywriting, he literally thought I meant copywriting works of, books and things like that, at the copyright office and everything. So it's amazing how much that comes up. But to answer your question, after John E. Kennedy, he had his definition, and then another copywriter named Claude Hopkins, I believe it was Claude Hopkins, sort of ran with that definition and expanded on it, and he said it's salesmanship multiplied, because that's really what it is. I mean, you could sit there and knock on 50 doors a day if you're lucky, or you can just put 5,000 sales letters in the mail or put a sales letter up on a computer, up on your website, and send 5,000 people to it. And it's just, you can just reach so many more people in one shot, and it takes all the stuff that people hate about selling out of the equation, like rejection and all that.
Now, but I thought direct mail was dead, guys. Is it?
No.
Not at all.
You get a lot of it still.
Well, and the thing is that markets fatigue. Different markets fatigue, or different markets I don't want to say ruined. I'll give an example. Like in the financial markets or the stock trading industry, that kind of stuff, the government has basically, allowed pump and dumps to be mailed out. And if anybody's not familiar with that phrase, basically you get a piece of mail that really hypes up a certain stock or stock ticker, and it says, go buy this ticker right now up to so many dollars. And then if you look on page 8 at the bottom in super fine print, you'll see, you know, such and such an organization was paid $500,000 to create in this mailing. This covers the expenses for the mailing, and any money left over was kept by the organization, right? So basically, there's like $500,000 on the line here, and their sole job is to inflate the value of the stock so that people go buy it, and then they dump it. So in other words, they pump it up, and then they dump it. And so that's how they make a whole bunch of money. And because the government has allowed that, it's kind of made a lot of mailings less effective in that market. So it doesn't mean if something like that happens in your market, it doesn't mean that direct mail is dead. It just means that you have to be aware of the selling environment and just take everything into consideration.
Now, direct mail can mean a lot of different things, especially in our political time that we're in right now. Obama and McCain and everybody who's running for governor, senator, House of Representatives, local garbage commissioner, whatever, there'll be a lot of direct mail going out. Now, that's a big part of copywriting, is writing letters, you know, in support of or against a particular presidential candidate or a senator, correct?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of political mailings.
Ton of political mailings. Now, and there's also copywriting then, like, for example, in Land's End or, you know, I got my Peterman catalog yesterday. I mean, there's some great copywriting in that. So basically, if I understand it correctly, Ben, anywhere that there is a written word that's used to sell, that's a form of copywriting?
Yeah. And catalogs is probably the best example I can think of. I mean, it's just a big book of copy. It's really all it is.
A couple of pictures, and they're trying to make you sound like you're going to look a lot slimmer, or the Harrington catalog, or Finger Hut, or whatever. I mean, pick one, right? There's literally millions of them out there, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, actually, it can even get more specific. I believe there's approximately 17,000 to 20,000 different titles right now, and that's estimated to grow even more throughout the next several years. So.
And so, Ryan, if I understand this correctly, you guys spend your days, and not all day, every day, but your basic job is to write letters or marketing copy or postcards or, yeah, I know in your case, letters or putting things up on the web, to get people, especially on the web, to open up their wallet, take out their credit card, and part with their cold hard cash. Would you say that's accurate?
I'd say that's fairly accurate. They're different actions that you can take. Usually, it's either to buy something or to register for something. And when they register for something, they're going to be sold in a different format.
Got it.
You know, maybe not through a sales letter, maybe through a live sales event or something. So the registration is just getting them to take the first step, you know.
And you get paid, you get compensated not only for writing this copy, but do you also get compensated based on how it performs? Is that ever a situation with any of your clients?
Yes, absolutely. I've got two ongoing clients where I have a profit tie-in. I'm doing another project right now. I just got paid an upfront fee that has a large percentage tie-in on the back end. So, yes, and those are my favorite projects where there's a fee up front and a piece of the back end. Anytime you do, you know, pure percentage stuff, you know, you risk not getting paid.
Well, how do you reconcile this as a believer, that the fact that you are writing sales copy, that you're basically pitching somebody in print or on the internet for them to either, you know, subscribe to be part of a e-zine, or in the best format is that they're going to pay money for something. I mean, does that make you kind of uneasy at times when you're writing copy?
No, not really. I mean, I've thought about it, but if people were starving, I'd give them food.
Well, expand on that. Tell everybody. I know what you mean, but tell our listeners what you mean by that.
Well, what I mean is that there are people out there that are actively looking for certain products and services.
Mm-hmm.
So my goal isn't necessarily to get everybody to buy something, because everybody isn't my market. My goal is to get those people who are hungry and give them what they want, so long as it's ethical, right?
Right.
So that's why I said, you know, I'd feed hungry people.
Do you turn down clients who aren't ethical?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
And sometimes it's not, you know, I don't know if it's ethics per se, but just moral issues. I've had three different offers related to the adult industry that have come in, and you know, I either just don't even talk to them, or I'll shoot them a quick email and just say, nope, not doing it. Bye.
Right. What about you, Ben? I know you've been, you obviously do the exact same thing that Ryan does. I mean, do you ever struggle with or lose sleep at night with the fact that you're getting people to part with their cold, hard cash?
No, and I know there's a lot of people that feel that way in business, and it really doesn't make sense. I mean, when you go to church every Sunday, they're getting you to part money to put another part of, you know, maybe a wing on a building or something. I mean, none of it's bad, but this is how the world works. We're in a capitalist country, capitalist society. Everything, money's moving no matter what. Whether you buy something or sell something or not, money's moving. And a lot of people, you know, if you're selling something ethical, as Ryan was saying, or something that's going to help somebody, and this goes back to actually choosing the right people to sell to in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a lot of people buy something to fill in some kind of void, to solve some kind of problem or to ease some kind of pain that they're having. You know, they're willing to pay money for it. They're, you know, I don't see any problem with showing them the solution to the problem that's keeping them up on Sunday night, staring at the ceiling, you know, scared to death of whatever it is that's bothering them. So, I mean, if you choose the right person to sell to, and you go in with the mindset that you're putting them first and not the product first, which is where I think a lot of people go wrong. They don't really care first about the customer; they care more about the thing they're selling. You're automatically reconciling all that together because you're finding someone who has a pain, and you're showing them how to solve that pain. And I don't see anything wrong with getting paid to do that.
Yeah. So from the human psychology standpoint, about from this whole standpoint of selling, as you said, there's a need, and people have some. They want somebody to help solve that problem. They have something that they want to get taken care of, and then they're going to look for somebody. Do you really view it as, Ben, as it being a Christian and being a copywriter and working for your clients, that somebody's going to get the money, that money might as well go into the kingdom, at least, or somebody who has a kingdom worldview? Do you ever look at it like that?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I've seen a lot of discussions about this sort of thing, and not just from Christians, but just from people, anyone. And money is circulating all over the place. And you know, just because you don't sell the thing you're selling to somebody, if they're looking for a solution to that problem, they're going to go find it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're selling something that you believe in and that you know can really help someone, you actually have an obligation, in my opinion, to put your product in front of them so they at least see it and they have a chance to buy it, as opposed to someone else's, which is probably going to be inferior to yours if you've done a good job creating the product right, or if you're a copywriter, you pick the right product to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, to me, it's very much in line with my Christian beliefs. And again, I almost feel an obligation if I find a very good product to sell and to get it in front of as many people as possible that
yeah.
actually can use it.
Yeah, and I, you know, I agree with you in that. I want to make sure that people who are listening to this are truly understanding the importance of this, and as a host of a show that is targeted specifically towards helping Christian entrepreneurs and Christian business owners, the number one hurdle Christian entrepreneurs and business owners have to get over is this concept of making money. They have a big, big issue with it. So that leads me to my next question here, guys. And Ryan, I'm going to toss this over to you, and then Ben, chime in as you see fit. But Ryan, how do you determine how much profit is enough for you and your business? I mean, is it six figures a year? Is it seven figures a year? 12 figures a year? Is your enough number being a billionaire? I mean, at what point do you say with money enough is enough?
You know, I have a couple of definitions for that, or a couple of answers for that. You know, one is, you know, enough to me personally is just whatever I need to pay my bills without going into debt.
Hmm.
That, I mean, technically that's enough. God has taken me through a couple of valleys early in my business where I wasn't making money and I was going into debt. And I mean, I had to trust him for everything. You know, it's very humbling when you're doing everything you possibly can to make money and nothing's happening. And you just go, well, I give up, Lord. You provide now. So
no, I have no idea what you're talking about, Ryan. I don't know. I'm kidding.
So, you know, I think he takes us through those experiences because, you know, the more money you have, the harder it is to trust God, really.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to become prideful when you have a lot of money. And so I think enough, you know, how much is too much? I guess that was kind of the question you're asking. How much is too much? It's probably different for every person. I don't think it's wrong to be wealthy, but money becomes a problem when it causes you to disobey God.
So you could have $1 billion in the bank, but as long as you're not disobeying God, that's okay. That's cool.
Well, I don't know. I guess it would come down to that individual. You know, if God is saying give it away, I guess that's true. So if God is saying give it away, then you give it away, and if you don't, then you're in disobedience. The money has caused you to disobey him.
Mm-hmm.
So and that can happen if you have $1 million, $1 billion, or it can happen if you have $100. If you feel God is telling you to give, you know, reach into your pocket and give a $20 bill to a guy on the street, and you don't, that money has caused you to disobey him.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. Ben, what are your thoughts on this topic?
Well, I agree a lot with what Ryan said. I'll even take it a little further. If God wants me to be a billionaire, who am I to stand in the way? You know, I mean,
we should put that on a T-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, and it's true. I'm just saying. My point is, it's really not my decision. I mean, I feel I have a calling to be an entrepreneur. I believe you two do too. We wouldn't, probably everyone listening to this probably feels that way or believes that. And you know, I don't think he's calling us to fail ultimately. I mean, we might have to go through some failures, as I know all three of us have had to go through. But ultimately, I mean, if God wants me to be a millionaire or a billionaire, or one day as the Fed cranks out more monies, we have trillionaires, you know, who am I to stop it? On the other hand, I don't really get too hung up on it. I just, you know, for me, money itself is just a tool to do things with, and it's neither good or bad. I mean, a lot of people say, well, money is the root of all evil. No, love of money is the root of all evil.
Mm.
And if you put it up as like some kind of idol or something, yeah, you're in trouble. But if you're using it as a tool to do things that you know God wants you to do, which you can, I mean, it's all spelled out for us in the New Testament, you know, give to others, and basically you're trying to do good with it. And I know that can be warped around too in people's minds. They think they're doing good and they can justify all kinds of bad stuff. But I'm just saying, generally speaking, if God is blessing me with money, I'm not going to stand in the way of it. You know, on the other hand, if he's putting me through some kind of test and taking money away, you know, that's fine too. I mean, either way, it's coming from him, and that's really the way I try to look at it and follow it.
Yeah.
Well, I thought I'd add something here too. If you study the life of Joseph, you look at the evil that was done to him by his brothers when he was sold into slavery and all that. But when Joseph came into power in Pharaoh's court and was put in charge of all of this wealth. I mean, essentially, he was wealthy. I mean, Joseph was, or at least he had control of that wealth. And so when Joseph finally meets his brother, he said, God, what you meant for evil, God meant for good to save many people alive.
Yeah. And there was also a huge amount of money that transferred, you know, in that 7 years during that time of famine, a huge amount of money transferred because of Joseph's great stewardship that
uh-huh.
he had under his control. Even though Pharaoh was Pharaoh, I mean, he was the ruler of the land. Nobody was greater in the land than Joseph. And so, aside from Pharaoh, who was obviously, as they thought, a God incarnate on earth.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, very, very important facts. I mean, it's just amazing to me as we survey customers and they go to our sites and they send emails in about just this big hurdle that people have with regards to money, which is why on our show today, and folks, you're listening to Renegade Christian Talk Radio, and my name is Matt Galogli. I'm your host, and I'm sitting here with two great copywriters and direct response marketers, Ryan Healy and Ben Settle. You can check Ryan Healy out at ryanhealy.com, and that's spelled R-Y-A-N-H-E-A-L-E-Y. Correct, Ryan? That I have that correct?
Actually, it's R-Y-A-N-H-E-A-L-Y.com.
L-Y. Sorry, thank you for correcting me.
Sure.
And I'm also sitting here with Ben Settle of BenSettle.com, and that's B-E-N-S-E-T-T-L-E.com. And we're talking about using psychological triggers to get your customer to part with their cold, hard cash and not feel guilty about it. And over the last 20 minutes or so, we've been talking about the money mindset that Christians need to have. And the mindset word has kind of been hijacked by the spirit, quote-unquote, the left coast, I think. But I want to talk about psychological triggers, guys, because when you're selling, and I've experienced this, it's very difficult to sell without using psychological triggers. At least I have found this to be the case, that there are certain things that you know if you say in a specific way to humans, or you do in a presentation from the stage, or if you're writing copy, that will get people to, in order for them to sign up and spend money with you. And I know that's a big part of copywriting, because I write a ton of copy myself for my own self. I'm not a for-hire guy like you guys are. And one of my favorite books on selling and using psychological triggers is written by Joseph Sugarman. He's a famous copywriter, and if you're familiar with Blue Blockers Sunglasses, that's Joe Sugarman. He now is semi-retired and lives in Hawaii, and he's made literally millions and millions of dollars in copywriting. But in his book, Triggers, he outlines a number of ways he uses psychological triggers to get in the head of his buyers and get them to open up their wallets. Now, Ryan and Ben, what I want to do is I've outlined about six or seven of them here, depending on time, that I like to use quite a bit, and I'd like to get your insight as a copywriter and as a Christian about how you might use it, and also whether or not you would use it in getting somebody to part with their cold hard cash. And the first one is greed. As we all know, the biggest things that drive people to make a decision is it's going to make them look sexier, or you know they're going to lose weight. It will improve their sex life, or it's going to make them wealthy. And usually, if you're making them wealthy in Americans' eyes and a lot of the world's eyes, if you're wealthier, you're more attractive to members of the opposite sex. So, Ben, I'm going to go to you first. How do you utilize, if you do, the whole impact of greed in getting somebody to get motivated to spend money with one of your clients?
Okay. First, before I answer that, I kind of got to preface it with something else.
Go ahead.
I have nothing but respect for Joseph Sugarman and his book and everything he's done for the industry.
That book is worn out. It's falling apart.
So what I'm about to say is no reflection upon him or saying that this stuff doesn't work or any of that. And because I will answer your question, I think it's important to say this, and maybe this will alleviate some anxieties from Christians who are afraid to sell anything because they don't want to feel like they're manipulating somebody. One of the biggest sort of aha moments I've had with copywriting, and this would go with any kind of selling you do, even if it's just negotiating, is I was talking to this guy, very top-flight copywriter named Doug Deanna, and he's pretty much known right now as if not the top copywriter, one of them, certainly one of them.
Mm.
And he explained to me, he goes, you know, all the tricks are nice and all that, and, you know, you should use them, all those types of things, the psychological stuff. He goes, but what it really comes down to, and he gave me this great example, and I think it illustrates things very well. He said, Ben, do you have a dog? I said, yeah, I got a dog. He goes, now, you know, how many times you got to call your dog to come over to you to sit on your lap or something? Now, my dog's not the most obedient dog in the world, so it takes a little bit of coaxing, right? He goes, now, I walk in with a cookie, and who's she going to come to? I mean, she's going to go flying right over to him because he's got something she wants. So my point is if you do all the marketing side of things right, which is finding the message to market match, finding out what somebody really, really wants, what's causing them some kind of pain or anxiety or something they desire first, find that one thing they want first, and then all these other things, you can use them or not, and you're still going to be successful. So I just throw that in there because I think it's so important to talk about. But so going on to the greed thing,
Hold on one second, Ben. Brian, yeah. What is your thought on that as a copywriter? Because I think Ben brings up a really good point.
Yeah. I mean,
you got to answer more than that. You can't.
Well, I was thinking about what I was going to say there for a second. I mean, I agree with him that, you know, these triggers, I don't know. I don't, when I write a piece, I don't consciously sit there and go, okay, I'm going to use greed here. And okay, I'm going to use this here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just basically, I look at my ideal customer, the person I'm imagining in my head, and I try to come up with something that's going to get their attention, something that's creative, unusual, unique, and then almost let the piece write itself as I'm trying to connect with that reader. So I'm really imagining it from his point of view and what he wants. I'm not trying to imagine it from my point of view.
You're not intentionally going out and saying, I've got this checklist of psychological triggers that I'm going to nail somebody with so that they will open up their wallet.
Yeah, right. I mean, obviously those motivators, I'd call them motivators, or everybody's got them. And so like with greed, you know, we say greed, well, is a desire for increase wrong? And at what point does desire for increase turn into greed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I also think about, well, am I really in a position to judge somebody's heart in that issue? I mean, I can basically say what the product does. Here's what the product does. And to me, that's kind of, you're making a factual statement. This
right.
product helps you do this, right?
Right.
Well, if somebody's greed glands start to kick in, I mean, I can't stop that.
right. Well, Ben, what are your Ben? I pulled away from you, so I want to give you a chance to finish up your thoughts on this one.
Well, I mean, there's different ways of, and I agree with Ryan. I don't sit there and say, well, I got to work greed into this. I got to work scarcity. I got to work. I mean, a lot of this stuff just it all depends on who. Every market is different. Every market is in a different state of mind. They're all in a different market timing point right now where that'll never happen again and never has happened before. So you have to tailor all this stuff around it. And I'm going to give you an example. Last month I had to go buy a car. My other car just pooped out of me and I had to get a new one. And, I mean, I saw what the car salesman was trying to do. I already wanted this specific car. My wife and I had researched this thing like crazy. We already knew we wanted it. We just wanted to go in and get a good deal on it. But he's still trying to play the game. Well, you know, this thing is, you know, someone's looking at it, and this was going to go to the owner's nephew, but we held it for you. I mean, it's just, yeah, right. You know, I mean, you could just see it a mile away, but it didn't stop. My point is he didn't need to do all that. We were there. I mean, he should have been asking questions of, well, okay, so are you ready to buy? And we would say, well, let's talk about price first. You know, and then that would have been our only objection. You didn't even have to go through all this. So I guess my point is you don't necessarily have to hit every single trigger. I mean, I'm not saying it hurts. I'm just saying it may not be necessary. And in some cases, you may actually shoot yourself in the foot if someone gets kind of offended by the overtly, you know, if they're on to everything. And this is why I think this guy is universally considered the greatest living copywriter right now. His name's Gary Bensavenga.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his thought on this, and you can get his easy and read this for yourself, I'm not divulging anything that's not out there, is really you got to prove it. If you can, all people want to know is that you are going to do what you say you're going to do, and that you've got the proof to back up your claims. I mean, that's really more important than, that comes first, I guess is what I'm saying. All this other stuff, it can be there, and you should use it, but I'm just saying if you get all the foundational stuff right, all these other things are just kind of like icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
And with greed, which I still haven't answered your question.
Well, I think you're making a very good point. I mean, the whole point of greed is, you know, from the, you know, like in my world where I was doing a lot of information marketing for years in the real estate world, it's all about showing people your six-figure check, putting copies of it up there, and talking about your lifestyle. You know, I took 3 weeks off this month, and we went to, here's the beautiful resort we stayed at, and here I am flying first class, and here's a picture of me driving my new fancy car. I mean, unquestionably in those situations, in my mind, we're hitting a greed gland. Now, nothing is wrong with any of that stuff that I just mentioned, but common everyday folk, Christians and non-Christians alike, are going to get excited about that stuff. I mean, because a lot of people fantasize about living in a 7,000 square foot home. Hell, I wouldn't even want to clean it. I don't know how big my electric bill is in my 3,600 square foot house. I don't want one double the size.
Well, you know, one way to do greed is just to simply give way more than the, provide more value than the money you're charging for whatever it is you're selling. That right there will tap into the, quote, greed gland. I mean, because people always want more no matter what. We all like that. I don't care who you are. You know, I don't care if you're on the street right now. You're always going to want more. I don't care if you're a billionaire. There's something you want more of.
Mm.
And there's, again, I don't see anything wrong with that. You're not hurting anybody because you're charging a fair price anyway. You're just delivering more value than what you're charging. And that's a very, in my mind, a perfectly legitimate way to use, quote, greed.
Let's talk about another one here. Let's talk about exclusivity. There's actually two I want to lump together, exclusivity and desire to belong. Now, in a prior life, I was in the golf business, as you guys may or may not know, and I sold memberships to private country clubs. And I recognize that people all want to belong to something, and they definitely want to belong to the thing that nobody else can be a part of. Now, again, from a selling standpoint and from a – I mean, I know that selling to belong and exclusivity actually has more power, those two things packaged together, has more power than greed when it comes to somebody making a decision. It's got to be hardwired in our DNA to belong to something. You know, there's got to be like a membership chromosome that God gives us. right next to red hair. But what is, you know, again, from your standpoint, guys, when you're looking at this, I mean, and somebody's doing a membership site, or there's selling something that there's going to be a limited number, a collector's edition, how do you handle that again? I mean, how are you going to approach that, Ryan, when you're writing your copy and using it to sell something and get people to open up their wallets?
Well, you know, if you were selling a limited number of things, I mean, I have no problem emphasizing that. I think it's universal that everybody wants to feel unique and special. Nobody wants to feel like a number, you know, mm-hmm. me included. So, I don't see that as being wrong to push those buttons. I can't think of anything that would cause me not to use those buttons. The desire to belong and exclusivity. I haven't thought about this too much, but sometimes people are just paying more and more money just to get to a higher level of belonging or higher level of exclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where you draw the line there, but you know, I mean, some people are happy to pay $100,000 just to be able to say they're one of five or you know whatever.
And churches do this. I mean, churches have memberships, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm part of a church that we don't have a membership because you know, I think we realized that it was kind of silly. But churches have memberships. You know, people, where do you belong? You know, when it comes to your faith, where do you go to church? Because that gives us a sense of identity.
Uh-huh.
Ben, as a copywriter, how do you utilize that of giving people a sense of identity, that they can belong to something, that they can be part of a specific organization or a team?
Well, it doesn't always have to be a specific organization or team. You could, if you have something that's truly unique and the person who created that product, whether it be you or someone else, has a truly unique story and they're delivering a truly unique benefit that they can't find anywhere else, which you can probably find in most any decent product if you dig hard enough, you're making it exclusive right there just by saying this thing is different and better than all these other things and, you know, be one of the – I'll give you an example. There's an old ad, I'm sure you guys have heard of it, it's "Do you make these mistakes in English?" And right in the subheadline is, you know, "Join 100,000 people who have used this course." I mean, all of a sudden, yeah, that's also a social proof thing, but it also kind of like makes you feel like, hey, you know, it's safe to be part of this, to be one of the customers of this product, and you can feel good about it because you're not the only one doing it. And I know this isn't the exact same as a membership or something like that, but I think it all works the same way. It's that same sense of belonging to something. You know, I'll say this. The church that my wife and I got married at, they're in a different state altogether, and a lot of people study with them around the world via satellite or the Internet, even shortwave radio sometimes. And people who study with them feel like they're part of something truly unique, not because the pastor's sitting there talking it up or anything. In fact, he's telling people not to do that. You know, he hates the Internet and all this stuff and people forming chat groups and all that. He's always telling people not to do it. But people do it because they feel like they're, you know, they love the teachings and they feel like they're getting fed, so they they talk it up, and they're probably the biggest, quote, salesman for that church just because they feel, like, so special because they've of the what they're learning and everything. So, you know, I think you can use it without even necessarily making it, like, an overt thing that's just right in their face. Like, here, there's a membership, and you know, only 10 people in the world are part of it and all that.
Yeah,
I mean, you can do it either way. I'm just saying that you can – a lot of these things can be real more, a lot more subtle than maybe that most of us think. So.
Yeah. All right, so I've got two more here I'm going to throw at you. And, folks, you're listening to the Renegade – you're listening to Renegade Christian Talk Radio. And I'm sitting here with Ben Settle and Ryan Healy, who are world-famous copywriters. We're talking about using psychological triggers to get your customer to part with their cold, hard cash and you not feeling guilty about it. And you can check out Ben and Ryan's blogs online by going to bensettle.com and going to ryanhealy.com. I'm going to throw out two more. I'm just going to throw these phrases out to you guys. And Ryan, I'll let you go first, and then Ben, you can follow up. These are two big triggers that Sugarman talks about, and I've used them as well, I readily admit. The first is guilt, and maybe I use guilt because I'm a recovering Catholic. The first is guilt, and the second is selling hope. Ryan, what are your thoughts of those two triggers?
Well, guilt, I think, can be used in a good way.
How?
I think if you guilt somebody into giving money, I don't know. For instance, World Vision or children who need food in other countries, things like that. You don't have to be real overt about it. It doesn't have to be in your face, but. You can use that as a psychological trigger that, well, you know, while you're living in your fancy home and driving your Lexus, you know, kids starving in other countries. And that's
like
a fact.
The TV, whatever the commercial is, where, you know, for a dollar a day, you can buy a 25-pound bag of rice to feed this family of 18 in Bhopal, India.
Yeah,
and
right. And how
like
could
the
you...
flies in their eyes, and they're living in the garbage dump, and...
Yeah, and if you see something like that, it's almost like, well, man, how could you go out and spend another $3 on yourself when you could spend $3 and feed a family, you know, for
right.
a week or something? And, you know, sometimes we become immune to those. I don't think that it's good to be like, you should feel guilty because blah, blah, blah. I mean, because I don't know. I don't think that's effective for one thing. But, I mean, the person could be already giving quite a bit. So, but I don't feel a problem with stating the facts. And if the facts make you feel guilty, well, then your guilt condemns yourself, you know. I mean, I'm not condemning you.
Right, right. What about selling hope, Ryan?
Selling hope, man, I feel that's really positive.
I mean, that's what Jesus did, right?
Yeah, I mean, hope beyond the grave, man. I have no problem with that.
Ben,
go
ahead, Ryan. I'm sorry, what were we going to say?
I was going to say, you know, the verses... I've been thinking about this a lot lately, you know, whatever is good, whatever is right, whatever is true, whatever is noble, you know, all that, you know, think on these things. And I think sometimes I'm like, man, I'm always focused on how bad the economy is and all this stuff. I'm like, gosh, it's actually a pretty big challenge. And, hey, so if you get an opportunity to sell hope, I think you're in that's a great position to be in.
Ben, what are your thoughts on those two, on those last two, guilt and selling hope?
Well, I'm trying to think back. I don't think I've ever, at least intentionally, even used guilt to sell something. And I'm not judging it either way. I'm just thinking I just can't remember a time when I ever had to use it. And maybe if I was writing to a specific market or something, I would. But I just haven't. But I think it's interesting that people get hung up on using guilt. Some of the biggest guilt people are the Christians, you know. I mean... Look at Mother Teresa. I mean, guilt and intimidation were like her bread and butter, you know?
You can send the nasty emails at bensettle.com. No, I'm kidding.
No, but, I'm serious. So, I mean, but look what she did with it. She got a lot of good donations that went to a lot of good things. So I'm not... Like,
no,
I'm
I know
not
you're
judging,
not. I'm just joking.
But
with you.
I just have never used it, so I really can't comment on it too much. But hope, I mean, without hope, people commit suicide, you know? I mean, I think God wants us to sell hope, and not only he wants to sell snake oil hope, but, you know, real hope. Like, and this all goes back to finding out what your market really, really wants and needs. And a lot of people say, well, don't sell the need, sell the want. But they're actually interchangeable. I mean, I needed a car last month. You know, it's not that I wanted one. I didn't want to have to go buy one, but I needed one, and I got one. And if you are finding out what people really want and need, and you can show them the solution, you're giving them hope right there, and they're happy to pay money for it, they're willing to pay money for it, and they'll feel good about paying money for it. So there's no reason to for people to get hung up on this at all. I mean, if your head is in the right place, and excuse me, and you're doing the right thing, and especially if you're praying about this, I mean, if someone has a problem with selling something, you know, pray about it. You know, you don't have to feel guilty. Just pray about it. Maybe you shouldn't be an entrepreneur, but I'm going to take this a step further, and I know this maybe gets off a little on the off track a little, but everybody is selling something. If you have a job right now, okay, unless you're living on the street, you have a job probably. That business you're working for is selling something, and it's selling something to people who are probably buying on credit. So you're contributing to this whether you like it or not. You might as well put yourself in a position where you can control it so that you know the product is good. You can control, you know, all the infrastructure as much as you can, and you can control the entire process, and you'll be doing a lot more good than just sitting around worrying about if what you're doing is hurting anyone. It's not. I mean, if you're selling something good that somebody really needs or wants, you're doing good. You should be, you know, happy about it.
Yeah, I have no issue as an entrepreneur and as a business owner, because unfortunately my wife and my kids have become addicted to things called food and shelter. Which, you know, and I know, you know, there's some people out there that say, well, I shouldn't drive the kind of car I drive, and, you know, so I drive a Acura, big deal, you know, and you know, or I should stay at the Holiday Inn Express instead of the nice Marriott or whatever. I understand all that. But you know what? To me, and I'm not a prosperity gospel guy. You guys know that. I mean, I'm not into that, you know, God's going to bless you just because you're a Christian thing.
Right.
That, we know, all three of us know that doesn't happen. But I will say all of this is that there's money out there to be made. My calling and Ryan's calling and Ben's calling and those of you and the listeners' calling of making money is no less right and is no less noble than somebody who's called to be a missionary or somebody who's called to be a pastor. And Ryan and Ben's ability to sell in print on the internet or via direct mail is a gift from God, and to not use it to the best of their abilities to glorify God, I wouldn't call it a sin, but it's being disobedient. And my ability to stand in front of a room and to sell something, or my ability to host a radio program or see business opportunities in the marketplace and recognize where the market is going, if I don't capitalize on that and use that for the glory of God and for the kingdom and to fund the kingdom, you know what, it takes a lot of money, guys, to fund a missionary in Iraq or South Africa or Saudi Arabia or Iran or Korea or China. Agree?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's critical to me. So I have two last things I want to cover here in our last 11 minutes or so. And, Ryan, I'm going to toss this one to you. I've noticed that even in my own life, and I buy a lot of stuff. I buy a lot of books. I buy a lot of tapes. I'm constantly educating myself. And being in the information business, I find that only 5% of purchasers ever use the thing that they buy. And my theory is it doesn't matter if they're buying a set of books and tapes to improve their life or how to make money on the internet, or they're reading a book about how to have a better marriage, or they're buying a toaster oven. Whatever you buy, out of 100 things that you buy in a year, only 5 of them are you really going to use them. But Ryan, as a marketer and as a copywriter, do you ever think about that? Does that ever give you pause about saying, well, geez, you know, if I sell too hard, there's going to be more people that wind up with this thing that don't really need it or don't really use it? Do you ever think about that when you're writing copy?
You know, I thought about that issue in the past, but I can't say it impacts my copywriting today. I mean, it doesn't. I think that when somebody buys something from you, you have an obligation to encourage them or help them use that product.
Yeah.
You know, on the back end, you might want to have some emails or some kind of follow-up that, you know, encourages them to actually use what they purchased. So, you know, as a business owner or an entrepreneur, I think that is helpful to, you know, make that statistic better. But an observation that I've made is that I'm just like everybody else. I don't use everything I buy. And, you know, I think that's just part of human nature. And, you know, to get to those 5 products I did use, I had to buy 100, right?
Right.
If I didn't buy 100, I wouldn't have gotten to the 5 products that I really needed and used and got an incredible amount of value out of. I mean, you can look at it as a, well, that's a bad thing, but, you know, it's a kind of a law. I mean, the 80-20 principle, you know, 20% of inputs create 80% of outputs in general, and vice versa, 80% of inputs only create 20% of outputs. And that's just how it works, you know?
Yeah.
There are leverage points, and so, I don't know. I think it's just part of everybody's journey of being a consumer, finding out what you really need and what you don't need, and you don't always know.
Kissing a lot of frogs, huh, guys?
Yeah.
So, all right, let's, in our last 8 minutes here, I want to talk about debt. Because, you know, if you listen to Dave Ramsey or have been through Crown Financial, and I think all three of us would agree that debt is really nothing more than an unholy alliance with the enemy. It's the 21st century form of slavery. However, Ben, I'll start with you. As a business owner, as an entrepreneur, can you start or run a business, do you think, without having any debt?
I think it's very easy to start a business without debt, depending on what you're doing. However, people should not let the fact that something that's going to cost a lot of money mean that think that they have to go to a bank and get a loan. If you have a good idea and you can prove it in a simple business plan to investors, you'll get money for it, because money chases good deals. Good deals don't chase money. So I think if you have everything lined up right, and again, this all goes back to basic marketing, proving that what you want to do is going to help, is actually going to be bought by people. I mean, that there's a human cry for it out there in the marketplace, and you can prove it with numbers. And I mean, I obviously can't go into all that right now. My point is, I don't see this. I don't understand how anyone would need it necessarily. I mean, maybe there are cases I'm just not thinking about. But if, like I said, good money or money from investor money, well, it chases good deals. And when you do that, you're not in debt.
And Ryan, you have a site where you're letting people kind of look over your shoulder each month as you are moving out of debt. It's called debtreductionformula.com. It's actually a blog. I was on there yesterday, and you show people at the beginning of every single month where your debt situation is. And you got in a little bit of debt as you started your business, right?
Yes.
And so you're taking people through. Let everybody know, you know, guys, we were talking about this offline. Debt as an entrepreneur is a different psychology as it is for the guy with a regular paycheck, right, Ryan?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because if you're an entrepreneur, you can't count on a regular paycheck. You know, it's hard to budget. You don't know if you're going to be able to make enough to pay all your bills next month or not.
Yeah, and so how do you handle that? How do you, you know, how have you handled those fluctuations in day in, day out or month in and month out with an entrepreneur or entrepreneur lifestyle?
Well, for one thing, I have a $5,000 line of credit attached to my bank account.
That helps with the overdraft.
Yeah. And I have had to use it. So you know, that's just a practical thing, I guess. But, you know, when I have money, I do my best to pay down my debt so that it reduces my obligations for the next month. And when I have just enough, I make my minimum payments. And, you know, I still use some of the same principles that somebody who has a job might use, you know, paying down high interest debt first, low interest debt later, that kind of stuff. But I don't know. The psychology of getting out of debt is a little different. It's not so mechanical. When you have a job, it's really mechanical. It's like, okay, I make so much, and this much goes to debt, and this much goes to other things, and blah blah blah. When you're an entrepreneur, it's not so mechanical. It's there's more of an art to it, I guess. You have to have some finesse, and you also really just have to trust God month to month. And I've been in that position a few times. One story, I literally was out of money, and I went to bed that night, and I was just going, man, I'm so done. and I prayed, and I said, Lord, you know, I don't know what to do. You know, please send me a client. Please send me some work. And I woke up the next morning, and an old client I hadn't heard from in 6 months was ready to hire me on the spot for a new project. And I went, whoa, that was a fast answer to prayer.
Yeah. My wife and I have been through those difficult times, and she was telling a story to me recently how we were in one of those very dark financial times, and she said she was praying up, and she was up throughout the night a number of times, and she just kept asking the Lord, Lord, would you just show us a little bit that Matt is on the right path? And that day I made two unexpected sales of $1,000 each, you know, from a campaign that's was going on that, you know, they weren't in the cycle yet where they could make the purchase. They, you know, we were building that relationship with them.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and she said when you called that day or texted me that day and said that we had made, you know, $2,000 off of some sales of some product, she goes, I just about burst into tears because that's exactly, and I didn't know that she was praying this. I didn't know that she was asking God to give us a little bit of a wink or a, you know, a pat on the back saying, it's okay, I've got you covered. So, Ryan, I've got one last question for you with regards to this. When you are reading somebody else's marketing copy and you see something that has the potential to make you money, let's say it's a business idea or they're selling a kit for $1,000 that will show you, you know, how to do a product launch, let's say, and
uh-huh.
and you see examples of people making $15,000 or $10,000 or something like that, and you're really out of cash, but yet you've got credit, and you really feel in your heart that that is something that you could utilize,
uh-huh.
the knowledge in that, in order to improve your business.
Uh-huh.
How would you approach that? Would you invest in that kit, or would you make that investment in your business, even though you might be very low on money in the business, in order to try and move it forward, or would you wait for God to provide? How would you go about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And just looking back on my history, you said, what would I do? Well, I would buy it, and I have bought it using a credit card. I can't say that all my decisions were wise decisions, but now when I'm faced with that, I look at it and I have to be honest with myself and say, is this something that I can utilize now? Is it something that I have time to act on now? And if I don't have time to implement it right now, there's really not a point to buying it right now. So, at least in my line of work, I have to consume so much information. I mean, reading is like breathing for me.
Yeah.
And there's a limit to how much I can take in and apply. And so, and I think there is for everybody. There's a limit to how many hours there are in a day. And one of the things I learned from Ben Settle, which is a great lesson, I loved it. It's one of the things he wrote on his blog once that really stuck out to me was, you know, when you buy a book or an information product, don't go through it once, but go through it like 5, 10, 20 times. And Ben has done that. And I haven't gotten to that level yet, but it's better to go deep in one thing and really learn it and really apply it than it is to, you know, gobble up, you know, course after course after course and just stash them on a bookshelf because they're not going to do any good on your bookshelf.
It's funny because I just invested in a program, and that was the exact thought process that I went through. Because the spirit of mammon can get over us where you just want to buy. You know, you hear people having million-dollar libraries, but million-dollar libraries aren't worth it if they're like the Great Gatsby and the books have never been opened, right? The pages
yeah, right.
Cut. And Ben, I want to get your quick thoughts on this as well, but I recently just invested in a program, and when I made that investment, I've literally blocked out an hour and a half each day to go through the DVDs so that I can educate myself and I can learn about and I can start to implement that. Ben, what are your thoughts on that? As we got about 90 seconds left here.
Oh, great. I think that's the way to do it. And if you can't find an hour a day, what you do is if it's an audio thing, or if it's a DVD or something, you make an audio of it. If it's a book, you read it, your book into an audio recorder. Either way, you put it in an MP3 player, burn it to a disc, you listen to it in your car, you take a walk with your dog for an hour a day or 2 hours a day, or just with your spouse or with yourself, and you can go through a lot of information that way. That's how I've done it.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, guys, I appreciate you taking the time. This has been very enlightening. I appreciate you joining me on the Renegade Christian Talk Radio. And you've been listening to Ben Settle of bensettle.com. That's BenSettle. And Ryan Healy of ryanhealy.com. And that's ryanhealy.com. Correct. Did I get that right, Ryan?
You got it right, Matt. Yeah.
Sweet.
Thank you.
I can keep my job for one more week. So that's good. Well, folks, guys, I appreciate you being on the call. Again, folks, this is Renegade Christian Talk Radio. I am your host, Matthew Galogli. You can find out more about me by going to prophetgodsway.com. And I have one last thing for everyone, for our listeners. If you'd like to send in prayer requests or praise requests or any comments about the show, you can send it to rceprayer@gmail.com. That's rceprayer@gmail.com. Ben, Ryan, thanks for joining me, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. We'll catch you next week on Renegade Christian Talk Radio. Have a great day.